So today we'll be looking, we've been going through the last part of the book of the, in the sealed book of the last book within it called the Acts of the Three Nephites. And where there's only four chapters left, we're on chapter 11 and there's only 14. So if you've got your book, you could get that. We'll mostly, and you may not know where it is.
We're going to read it.
Okay, in that case, what we've been doing is kind of reading through a chapter and commenting on it as we go. And today I'm recommending, chapter 11 is not very long. Well, it is three pages.
Yeah.
But if we can, we probably won't have time. Chapter 12 is really long and we might spend 2 weeks on chapter 12. We'll see. I thought we might start on 12, but I think we're just going to have time for 11 because there's usually lots of comments. So, Jeannie, why don't you start on chapter 11?
Okay. Chapter 11, verse 1. Now, brethren, listen to this premise. We cannot think of any more intimate and stronger union than that between God and his Son, the Messiah. The strength of this union was proved by the strict obedience of Jesus up until death, and by merit obtained by his blood shed for our benefit. He extends to us sinners the invitation to this same sonship with the Father through adoption, and for this reason. He granted us the glory that God had given him, glory that belongs to sons and daughters, heirs of his kingdom, and therefore we will no longer be called servants nor servants of his house, but regents and stewards of your property.
Right. So I've got a few comments on that.
Okay.
By the way, again, no, this is just the comments on what it said. First of all, makes a really strong point that this whole thing is about becoming like a united order and building Zion and all becoming of one heart and one mind. So he starts out by saying that he can't think of, and neither can we think of anything stronger than the union of Jesus to his Father.
Right.
Jesus would say often that he and the Father are one. That he said it so much that, wait a minute, something just happened to our picture.
It's a little hand in the way.
Oh, is it a book?
No, but it's
jumping. I know.
On her side.
No, it's on our side.
No,
it's our picture.
It doesn't see me.
That's really weird. There's nothing between us and the camera. Something. Now I disappeared. Ed, you take over. Wait a minute. Yeah, the camera's. Maybe. It might have been a fly on the lens, on the camera. A fly just flew away.
Okay, now we know. Okay. That was a little scary. Okay.
All right. Well, at least we noticed it.
Yeah.
Moving. And now there we go. Okay. The first point is we're supposed to all try to be one just as much as Jesus and Heavenly Father are. But something else he says here, we are invited to be children of God through adoption. That's a really important point. It's through adoption. We always say, well, we're all actually children of Heavenly Father, and so, you know, we have the right to inherit everything. But that's not really how it works. The way it works is through certain temple ordinances where you're actually adopted into a family that's all going to be in heaven. And most of the families on earth are not going to be up in the celestial kingdom. And Joseph Smith understood this. This is another change in the church, but it's a change that never got off the ground because they never got the temple in Nauvoo finished. But Joseph Smith understood it, that the way the temple ordinances would work would be through adoption. You're sealed in to the real family of the fathers of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What the LDS Church has done, I've read the comments where Wilford Woodruff and John Taylor were talking, and they said, do you understand this adoption? And they said, no, Joseph Smith was talking about it, but he got killed. And Brigham Young didn't understand it. And so what they've done in the LDS Church is seal everybody to their real families. But most of those families, we may want to mute. When you say something, the picture just went over to you, Bobby, when you might want to mute Bobby. Well, just be.
It's okay.
It's okay. Just know that when you speak, the picture will shift to you. Even if you're whispering. So you can see it. She's on now. Okay. Moving on. The early brethren did not understand the adoption idea. So they did the best they could. And so now all these families are being sealed to each other. But if you think about it, an awful lot of the people we're being sealed to in the temple are in hell, actually.
Didn't make it.
They didn't make it. They're looking to us to save them. We're supposed to be the saviors on Mount Zion. And they're waiting for us to be in a real temple and be sealed in through adoption to the Father. And then they can be sealed in to us. Anyway, I'm just saying, in that one simple little, that's why we have to study this, because these little simple words are huge.
So I have a question. How are we getting adopted? I mean, we're not going to the temple. We're not doing sealings.
We're not
with the church.
No, well, the LDS church has never understood it. New temples are going to be built. David the servant is working on building a temple. Mauricio said that the temple the church is going to build will be in Missouri, and that's not going to happen until after Missouri is destroyed. So right now, it's not happening. But just for us to understand that that's the principle, and that we have to build up the church so that there can be a temple, a real temple again, and that can happen. So see, we get all of that out of verse 1. But that's when we're no longer servants of God, but we're actually stewards and friends. At the high level, Jesus calls us his friends rather than servants. Okay, I'll read verse 2. I guess we're the readers today.
Yeah.
Verse 2. We are therefore members of the family of God. Now, he's already done this. He's already sealed in. So we are therefore members of the family of God, in whom we are required to maintain the unity of spirit in the unifying bond of peace and love from the first day of our existence as a church. Just as I, Jonah, saw with my own eyes when I was taken from among the Nephites and placed among the apostles of Jerusalem. So now he's going to talk about the church of Christ. And earlier in the book, it talked about that he was translated. I mean, he was translated before he started all of this. But a translated being can, even a physical being, can move around. So he goes over to Jerusalem and he finds out there's a lot of churches of Christ, one in Jerusalem. And you know how Paul went all over Europe and he started churches in every little city. So now he's going to talk about the Church of Christ. Okay. Is there any other? And Bobby, do you tell us if you have any comments or anything? Okay, verse 3.
Okay. So Jonah is the one of the three Nephites that is actually doing the writing, and then he says in various segments in here that the other two Nephites help him. So, but that's when he says, I, Jonah. He's the Nephite. I mean, the...
What are the three Nephites?
Yeah. So verse 3. Where I have learned that there are many churches of Christ already established in all parts of Israel and scattered throughout all nations, being all of them churches of Christ. But who together make up the church of Christ, the big church of Christ?
And that's in all capital letters,
yeah,
to distinguish it.
On the face of the earth, different in customs and tongues, formed by people coming from all the sects of the Gentiles and proselyte Jews, who have abandoned their own religious opinions, customs, and traditions to give way to this new way of being and feeling in their hearts.
Okay. So he's just making the distinction between, it's sort of like what we call a branch. We look at ourselves like a branch of the church.
Right.
But each little branch can be called the Church of Christ. When Joseph Smith started the church, the original name was the Church of Christ. And we're going to, there's a verse in here that we're going, I think we read today. Oh, it's...
Verse 4 explains the unity, how it's pulled together.
Okay, but there's a verse that I've just discovered that refers to us in particular right now, us. But let's, we'll get to that when we get to it. Right now, we're just saying they're all kind of called the Church of Christ. And originally, the church was, in Joseph Smith's day, was also the Church of Christ. 4. People of entirely different social and cultural backgrounds, just like us, that we were introduced beyond the great waters by our ancestors who came with Lehi and his family to this land of promise to compose those other sheep of whom Christ spoke, which he would have to seek also for the purpose of uniting us into one fold under the command of one shepherd, having one heart and one soul and possessing all things in common. So, you know, now that's interesting. I read this twice last night to prepare. And always when I read it here, I see new things. It's one thing to be of one heart and one mind, but whenever you think of all things in common, you think of it, I mean, I have thought of it as like within our fellowship or within an area. But he's talking about people in Israel and Jerusalem and the Nephites. And he says, not only we are having one heart and mind, or he says soul, but possessing all things in common. And that's true when you find out that the people had a big earthquake over somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
You can ship things over to help them across the country, across the ocean. The LDS Church does do this, not very, anyway, they do that. They'll ship things to relief, and that's similar to the concept here of even in different churches having all things in common. I've never even thought of that before. Yeah, go ahead and read 5.
Verse 5. Let us therefore abandon all the barriers that divide us and be incorporated into the family of God, stripping us of evil feelings and covering our hearts of the purest and highest gifts from the Holy Spirit, there being no more between us this division, between Nephites and Lamanites, nor among Josephites and Jacobites or Zoramites, but that we are all called by the name of Nephi alone, which has been a symbol of a just and virtuous faith among all these people which I have quoted, there being no distinction between the people of the church, between slave and free, man or woman, for we are all one in union with Jesus Christ. Okay.
Okay, well, we're just going to finish chapter.
Okay, you go ahead and find your book and read, and we'll call you later. Okay.
All right. Okay. Okay, so one point that is made here, it's really like the most fundamental point that is needed for Zion. And that is, everybody's equal. They may have different jobs. Somebody's the cook, somebody maybe mows the lawn.
Right.
Somebody's the leader and the prophet. Well, you do what you want, but
no, go ahead.
But they're all equal. And when you read in the Book of Mormon how they held for 200 years, they were successful with this united order and all things in common. The first thing that happened, when you look at where did it first start to break down, was designer clothes, where somebody now had fancier clothes and started to look down on other people because they were richer, and they stopped having the all things in common. And it goes right with pride. Anyway, he makes the point again here. Verse 6. Anything else you want to say?
Anybody? No, I was just kind of looking for that quote in here.
Verse 6. As for the mediations and portions which you receive in your stewardship, or additions or improvements which you make to your properties, which have been assigned to you by the High Council, whether dwellings, pastures, or plantations, be they animals or any other type of resources from your stewardship, will be designated by the hand of the high priest that is in charge to keep the storehouses of the church, and he shall not touch in the things of your consecration without a consensus of the high council, or by common consent of members of the order at a general assembly of all stewards who compose it, having these powers equal to the highest council, for the benefit of some brother or family who has been forgotten by the authorities of the church. Nevertheless, the order to give the portion due in aid of the needy, required by the voice of the people, must come from the one who is appointed and ordained for this blessing, having an evaluation of the situation of the High Council, followed by a support of mutual agreement between them. I'm going to restate that in my own words and see if everybody agrees. I read this a couple of times last night to understand it. What he's saying is, I believe, my understanding is, that when they divide everything up, when the church is starting, and now you are given a stewardship, and say you've got a little house and a few animals, and now you're going to work on your own stewardship. So you work on it, and guess what? You build a nice fence, and you make some additions, and you really work with the animals, and now you have a bigger flock and a bigger herd, and somebody else got a house just like yours and didn't do anything. And so they're happy with what they've got, you're happy with what you've got. What it's saying is,
don't keep up with the Joneses.
Well, yeah, not his dad just said, yeah, don't try to keep up with the Joneses, and that's fine. But now he's saying, suppose a family is new or is found or joins who is poor and needs stuff. Before, people just come to you and say, oh, we see you have a lot bigger herd, and we see you've got a lot more. So we're going to take your stuff and give to the new person instead, you know, and the guy who didn't improve his lot, we'll just leave him the same. It's saying, before, the way this is going to work is, there is a high council in charge of things. And there's one man, one high priest that's over this. And now we would probably call him the presiding bishop. And in this church, it's Joni Batista in Brazil. Before he comes up and says, hey, this needs to go to the new family, either one of two things has to happen. And you've already agreed that everything's in common, so you're supposed to be willing to share everything.
Right.
So, but before it's actually done, either the entire high council of 12 men have to all agree that, yeah, you ought to share that. You know, we recommend that you share that. We're suggesting you be the one to donate. Or the whole general conference, it says it's either the high council or a whole general conference of everybody, in case they don't agree, can decide. So this is trying to prevent one man from becoming usurping power and going around and taking stuff from you and giving it to them. And we've already, anyway, so that's their way to try to make sure that it's fair. Because there has to be some system, right, to do it. If there's not a system, then we just have to hope that the neighbors all chip in and give to the new family or something. But we talked in an earlier meeting about when I studied these groups that are trying to do this, the Amish, the Mennonites, and the Hutterites. They all end up, they've been pretty successful in sharing, and they all end up having some people at the top that make these decisions. And they've been successful for some 100 years too, in some things, not all things. Okay.
Well, I think it's really important to understand how that, how those decisions are made. Because right now, in the
corporate church,
the decisions are being made incorrectly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this next verse, verse 7, and the following verses do talk a lot about the differences of people within the United Order. So let's kind of look at that. Verse 7, any portion to be distributed by the sacred order must be in accordance with the faith and capacity of the recipient, whose sentiments which form his personality and values that direct his life are not contrary to the stewardship attributed to him. But that's very important that he is... His heart is in the right place, the recipient. But let your belief in this position be strong enough to keep you steady in your daily business without complaining or weakening. It has to come directly from the heart. Don't get off course.
Let's read a couple of verses here and then discuss it.
Okay.
Verse 8. Men are transformed into what they carry within themselves. For this reason, will never be truly free, that a man whose soul is conformed to be a slave, since he will never behave proudly in spite of his freedom. On the other hand, he who is free in his soul will never be a slave, even if he's kept in captivity. And as soon as it must be, he is respected by his posture before his masters, because nothing resigns him to this condition. So let me comment on these two together then. It's saying that when you hand stuff out, it's not one size fits all.
Right.
It's not that everybody's going to get the same of everything. One person likes a certain kind of heart work and another likes another kind. Somebody really wants to play the harp. You're not going to give them a flute. And a big one is slave versus free man. Now back then they had real slaves.
Right.
And if you think about it, when the blacks were made free in 1860, whatever, Civil War times, a lot of them had no idea how to be free, and they'd rather serve. And a lot of them would get jobs being, you know, servants. I remember in the 50s, it was common on TV shows that people had black servants, black maids. Rochester on the Jack Benny show. And there was nothing wrong with that. He liked
it's serving. The way people were raised in it.
People were raised that way. But the point is, when they were first made free, part of it was a disaster because these people had no idea how to be free. And now if you look at the world today, many people are enslaved through debt. Many people are enslaved through entitlement, where they're living on the dole. And if you just suddenly told all of them no more dole, as the scriptures say, the slothful person who will not work is not worthy to wear the clothes of the laborer, words like that. So it's just saying that it has to be done, where a person who's not used to being free and in charge of things should not be given too much responsibility. And the ones who are already free, there's no problem with, because they'll, even if you lock them up, they'll still know they're. The point is, things are distributed according to what people are prepared for. That's what it's saying, I believe. Do you have any follow-up comment there?
Earlier we talked, it's not in this chapter, but it's in another one, about how you have a group of people. Some are very happy in the level that they're at, is what this is saying. You're very happy, but that the duty of the people in charge making decisions to help everyone in the sacred order, and again, that's the High Council, and they tell us how it's done, is that don't hold somebody down. If there's a family, like we talked about, who had the house that was not the guy who built his herd up, but the other guy, but say there was a son in that family who wanted to learn to become something higher than what his dad was, that they should have that opportunity. And that this is what we're saying. Some people are happy with where they're at, and that's okay. And some people are not, are more willing to work and willing to do more and produce more and learn more. And that's okay too.
So you fit the needs and wants. The scriptures say, you fit the needs and wants of the people.
Exactly.
Watching, needs always should come before a want.
Yeah, needs first. Always. Yeah, you gotta eat, have a home, be dry, warm.
But if someone offers it to you, right? Say you're like, you're going hungry. What the hell? You're going hungry. Would you turn around and say, I'll do you a favor? You grow it. You harvest it. You give it to me. Now you will bring it to me.
So that's what it says here.
Let me finish. So what that means is, we're going to do you a favor. We'll be glad to take it off your hands. You just bring it to us. That's what they say today. Now they carried it on one step forward. You got an abundance. Now I'm talking about my own business, but.
Right.
We'll wait till you're gone. We'll just take it. And that's what they do today.
And his they is the corporate, the local corporate church.
Right.
Right. And so that's why we're reading this system, which is much better than that, not doing that kind of thing. So he's showing how that it can be corrupted. So the people in charge just say, yeah, we'll just come and take everything. And we just read how they're trying not to do that in the real system, so that right. that mistake
real
is
system,
not made.
You don't do that.
Right. That's not a mistake that's made. Okay.
Verse 9. Behold, and this being said concerning those who occupy such a post among the Nephites, since there should be no slaves nor free among us, for we are all active stewards in the house of the great Lord. On the other hand, it is not coherent to send away that slave who feels secure in relation to his family and with respect to his affairs, and fears in his heart not to know what to do if his freedom is extended to him, since he has spent all his life in the service of his master. To this one must be extended before freedom, understanding through a portion between his Lord, or even in some office that does not distance him from his usual duties.
Right, so again, that's, in other words, some people want to be maids, want to be janitors, want to serve. That is a position of service,
right?
Which is what life's all about, and serving others. And again, on those shows back in the 50s, and they had the black maids or servants, they were all happy as could be in all those shows. They were content, not grumbling and wishing they could get out of there. But anyway, if somebody is wanting to get out, let them get out. Okay, 10. On the other hand, it is not fitting for a disciple of Christ to keep under his control one who feels free. So see, that last verse was, if somebody wants to be the servant and stay, then don't kick them out and make them the head of some company that they don't know anything about. But if there's one who does feel free and master of himself, and in his heart he is ready to show his capacity and the inner strength, which has so long been hidden within himself. Why don't I go ahead and read the
piece of short. Yeah, go ahead
short.
And finish.
Similarly, each should be assigned a portion commensurate with the values and yearnings. See, that's like the wants.
Right.
They carry in their hearts. For just does not feel free that man whose soul conforms to be a slave, similarly, a farmer will not know how to correspond to the offices of a builder, the office of a builder, unless there is this longing in his heart. So a lot of this is about the heart. If the guy hates being a farmer, his dad is on a farm, wants his son to be the same, he wants to go be a doctor, let him go. Last verse. Here are the means of administering each portion and its measures to be assigned according to the stewardships among the members of the United Order of Enoch, so that they are compatible with their abilities or desires, and they conform to their beliefs and values. So I'm going to give one example. When I saw this show on the, it was one of those three groups I mentioned. I think it was the Hooterites. So they interviewed a boy who was about ready to leave the whole organization. Why was he not happy? He had clothes, he had plenty of food. Why wasn't he happy? Well, his job was to go collect all of the eggs for like 1,000 people every day and to sort them. So they showed him going through, and they had all the hens and the eggs all. So he's pulling out all these eggs and sort of, and he said, I want to do more in life than sort eggs for everybody.
Yeah.
And you can understand that. And they weren't taking into account his needs. He might want to be a great violinist or something. And so he had to actually leave the community because they did not address that problem. And it is addressed here. They could go and say, hey, you know, I've got this assignment, but my heart is yearning to do this other thing.
Right.
And so they're addressing the problems that are real problems in real societies who are trying to live these principles. Our recorder may be off now. You might have been. Oh, no, we're still.
Are we still?
No, we're still recording.
We're still recording. Okay.
Do you want to, I think we're about done with our lesson.
We're
part.
Done with, you, yeah.
That was a good lesson.
Yeah. It's a great book.
I know that part.
Yeah.
Are you a great person?
I am just reading the book and thinking.
You didn't answer the question.
If you are, we're all equal.
I am who I am, and it's all what I am.
And that's what I am. And Popeye, I am what I am, and that's
all. Oh, I didn't think of that one, Popeye.
That's all what I am, or whatever. All right, the next week we're doing chapter 12, and I think we have spent long enough on that that we should stop. But chapter 12 has the words of Jesus, you know, and it's we might spend 2 weeks on it because it's really got good stuff. Go ahead. What are your final comments?
Well, back in verse 7, it says, let your belief in this position be strong enough to keep you steady in your daily business without complaining or weakening. That to me is really strong because people the man part of us tend to complain. And understanding how people view themselves, if they want to be the butler, or they want to be the mechanic, and they're happy with that, but they struggle maybe to make that medical payment, then don't complain about helping them with that medical payment.
Excellent.
That
point.
Because we're all still part of the family.
To do.
Right, right. And if that boy doesn't want to collect eggs, maybe someone younger who's growing up and learning to do something can collect eggs, and he can be allowed to learn other things. This is the family part of the United Order, and I just wanted to
That's kind a great of say point that. You made, though. If somebody's in what we would call a lower
class person,
not class, but paying job, a job that doesn't usually get paid as much.
Right.
And now he's in an organization where, see, this is where it's important that we're all equal. Now he's in an organization where we're not doing classes and riches. And, oh, lawyers should get more because they repair people instead of the mechanic who repairs cars. And that's really the same idea, you know. And so if he has medical needs, that's why, if you're doing this right, all the medical needs are covered, and we all treat each other and love each other as equals, we wouldn't be complaining that, oh, I'm paying for the medical thing of somebody who's not ambitious enough to earn enough to cover his own.
Exactly.
Good point. Exactly. I've never even thought of that, but that's already covered in everything we read, that, like you said.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Still right in there.
All righty. We're going to close off our lesson now.
Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
So goodbye, and glad you could join us. And isn't it over on the end?